What you see in a public agency typically, and I worked for school boards and was on a school board for 8 years, is that you have an independent line of authority from the school board, for example, to the finances. And that's to ensure transparency and integrity. So if the superintendent or assistant superintendent or someone is misusing money, you have a finance person who can go to the board without fear of being fired by the executive director or the superintendent or by anyone else, or being ordered, not to speak with board members, because that's really the more common danger when you have an organization like a nonprofit or a public agency, is that the person in charge says to staff, you may not speak with board members without my permission, except by going through me. Now, some Edea Pacifica may do that at some point, and it might even be a good idea, because I'm not sure it's a great thing when we have staff members constantly lobbying the board to say, well, I need more money, or I need more this, or I need more that. It might be more orderly if they made those requests through the ED, but that's a fight to be taken up another day. But the CFO has that right and that responsibility right now, and that's why Lonnie is such an important part of the organization. He's the one who makes sure that the finances are transparent, that your questions are answered, and that when bills are submitted for payment, that they're, the bill payment is attached to an actual budget line that's been approved by you. In other words, if someone says, I want $10,000 to cover my trip to Europe, I'm going to Europe next week, I'm going to check and do a study of public radio there, and I'd like $10,000. Lonnie could say to me, he says, wait a minute, we don't have $10,000 in the budget for that. And if you, submit those credit card receipts, they're not going to be paid. And he'd be able to do that, again, without fear that he could suffer retaliation or retribution by anyone else on staff. That's really what it's about. And, I've heard, as I said before, I've heard so many complaints about this, which just seem grounded in myths about how Pacifica functions. Like, if you want an expenditure approved, that it's Lonnie's job to decide if we can spend $150 on programming. Lonnie doesn't think that's his job, and he doesn't do that. What he'll do, if you're the head of programming, or if you're the head of the affiliates, and you try to access money that's not in the budget, he will tell you, no, that money's not in the budget. If you want money in the budget for whatever your project is, you got to go to the board to get the board to put it in the budget, and then you can draw on it. So that's the way the staff works. And there is, if you want to think of it this way, if you look at an organizational chart, Lonnie is responsible both to the board and to the executive director. And that's, I think that's the way the, and I shouldn't say line, the CFO is responsible both to the ED and to the board. That's what the bylaws already say. There doesn't need to be any change to make that into a reality. So. Now, I want to talk briefly about conflicts of interest. We have conflicts of interest provisions within the bylaws, which are incomplete. Frankly, they're cumbersome, but they're also incomplete. And what I mean by that is that all of us, meaning all of you and people who are in leadership positions on the staff, have the duty to avoid conflicts of interest. And what a conflict of interest is defined partly by our bylaws, but is also defined by the law. And if you want to know what a conflict of interest is, you just ask yourself a very, very, very simple question. Do I have an interest in this as an individual, which is separate and apart from my interest as a custodian, or as we say in the law, a fiduciary of the foundation? And if you think you do, you do. I mean, if there's an issue before the board, which the result of how that issue is decided is whether I can be on the radio, for an hour next week or not, well, then I have a conflict of interest, right? Even if I'm on the radio for free, even if I'm an unpaid staff member on the radio. If the board's decision is going to impact whether I'm on the radio, then I need to say, I'm not going to vote on that issue. I'm going to recuse myself. And not only from the vote, but from the conversation about it. Okay? Of course, when there is a financial issue. When we were talking with Rob about taking on the digital distribution project, well, again, this is my opinion, but I think I'm right. There was a lot of confusion about this topic. There was no doubt that Rob would have to step back on that motion. The motion that said, we're going to hire Rob and we're going to pay him X number of dollars. Well, he shouldn't vote on that because he has a personal interest in the outcome. But then other people said, well, that means that he shouldn't be on the board. And I think, as you know, in wanting to make sure that no one had any ill suspicions of him, Rob took, you know, three steps back when he only had to take one step back. Because there are some folks who are saying, well, you know, you've got a conflict of interest if you're on the board and you're on staff. And that is simply not true. Conflicts of interest arise. They're issue-based, issue-bound. It's rare, if not impossible, to think that there is a conflict of interest that affects you as an individual across the board. Conflicts of interest always arise in particular situations. I mean, if we're looking to find a new place, you know, for WPFW, and Ambrose's cousin owns a great piece of property out there that he thinks would be a great place, you know, for the station. Well, then Ambrose steps back on that question. He doesn't step back being a board member. And that's how it works. And, you know, we have a process for excusing conflicts of interest, which sometimes we use. But I think the better practice is that when an individual has a conflict, they just step back. Now, you know, another issue that arose concretely a couple of years ago was when Nathan was hired to do national programming. And when he was hired to do national programming, at that time, he was an affiliate representative on this board. And so at that time, there was a lot of conversation going on regarding the executive director, the evaluation of the executive director, the compensation of the executive director, and so on. And we advised Nathan that anything having to do with the executive director, he should step back from. Why? Because the executive director is someone to whom he reports directly, okay? Directly. He's a direct reporter of the executive director. So if he's going to be involved in evaluating the executive director, and the executive director is going to be involved in evaluating him, you could see how there could conceivably be a sort of tit-for-tat situation there. So of his own free will, Nathan decided to resign from the board because, in his estimation, so many issues were likely to arise during his year on the board that he would be recusing himself so often that he couldn't be an effective board member. So he chose to resign. He didn't have to, but that was a decision that he made consistent with principle. So that's what I want to say about conflicts. Conflicts, I think, has the issue has kind of cooled off in the last 6 or 8 months, but a year ago was a pretty hot issue, and I just want to help people, you know, work through how to think about those questions. An unfinished area of business, which I know that Sarv and other people on the governance committee want to spend some time on this year, is the issue of code of conduct and ethics. And, you know, it's well understood you can't really legislate ethics, but I believe personally that it would be helpful for the Pacifica board to adopt a code of conduct. And a code of conduct is kind of, you know, it's an agreement. There's 22 of you, and if you adopt a code of conduct, what that means, more than a legal thing, is that the 22 of you have agreed this is the way you'll conduct yourselves, right? And, you know, it's... it might be important, right? I mean, we talk about speech and free speech, but, you know, is speech which is dishonest, is speech which is rumor-mongering, is speech which is harsh, is speech which is simply too much, really necessary free speech. And if we had a conversation about that and could reach agreement, that would be a great thing. And it might then mean that whoever's chairing the board would have the ability to say to somebody, look, you have agreed that you would not do this, and here you are doing it, so please don't do it. And perhaps our meetings would be more productive and more orderly if we did that. Perhaps I'm naive and someone could sell me the Brooklyn Bridge, but anyway. The last thing I want to talk about is confidentiality. And I saved this for last because I continue to believe it's our biggest problem as a board, not only nationally, but locally. People in this organization use confidential information as a weapon. And they disclose information when they think it's going to do them some good, and they complain about other people's disclosures of information when they think it will do them some good. And I want to say, as strongly as I can, as your lawyer, that I wish you would stop. And if there was ever, you know, a reason to discipline one of your colleagues, I think it should be around breach of confidentiality, because it really hurts. And I'll give you a concrete example. And I'll talk more about this when we, this afternoon, talking about lawsuits. You know, as everybody knows, we have several lawsuits against the foundation. And most of them are not serious, although one or two may be serious. But what I have seen with respect to these lawsuits is that people's attitudes towards Pacifica depend upon their attitudes towards the person who is involved in the lawsuit, right? Now, very simple. As an organization, Pacifica is responsible to defend, meaning provide a legal defense to, and indemnify, meaning provide, pay the judgment against any individual who is an executive or administrator or board member of this organization who is acting within the course and scope of his or her employment. Now, let me tell you, because sometimes people want to argue about that. Scope of employment excuse me. Scope of employment is a legal term, right? It has a meaning that is imposed on it by law. And it doesn't mean something I ask you to do. If I ask you to to drive from New York to Patchogue to pick up a bunch of CDs, okay, and bring them back because they're premiums in the station, that's your task. Now, if along the way you stop and rob a bank or beat somebody up or sexually molest them or get into an automobile accident, it's likely that Pacifica is going to be sued, and a court is most likely to say that whatever you did was within your scope of employment, even though it was not something your employer asked you to do. You did it while carrying out your job duties. Okay? So, you know, if my friend Sarv did something like that, we might be all really pissed off at Sarv. We might be really angry and want to cut his throat and throw him to the wolves. You know? And maybe that would be a righteous feeling. But someone laid a lawsuit on him and said, well, Pacifica, you've got to defend me. I was within the scope of my employment. The most likely thing is we would be responsible to do that. And to me, that means two things. One is that when we hire Sarv, we should be careful and understand who we're hiring. Okay? I mean, you know, not to go off too much on this, but in the years that I've been associated with Pacifica since we took it back, I think that the biggest mistakes we've made are hiring mistakes. And we've hired some folks who we shouldn't have hired because we didn't do sufficient checks on them. We didn't really convince ourselves that this was a person we should hire and give this responsibility to, and then we've wound up with problems that we had to clean up. Okay, so that's one thing. That's one lesson. But the second lesson, which is more germane to what I'm talking about, is that we really have to close ranks. When Sarv, and I'm picking on Sarv because I know he's probably the least likely person to engage in any misconduct. If Sarv does commit misconduct, we have to defend the case. And if we happen to know the person that he mistreated when he was out doing our duty, and we like that person more than we like Sarv, it doesn't matter. We can't help that person. And, you know, and the reason I'm saying this, because I'm involved in a lawsuit in Los Angeles on behalf of Pacifica. And the lawyers on the other side of that lawsuit know more about the facts relevant to that lawsuit than I do. I find out from them about documents that were generated at KPFK by an employee who chose not to give them to me, who perhaps even refused to give them to me, or tell me they even exist. And then the other side's attorneys are using them in depositions. And I kid you not, you know? And or the other side's attorneys are talking to paid and unpaid staff or LSB members. And that really needs to stop. I could just go on and on about that. It's going to kill us. I mean, if there's one thing that's going to cost this organization a lot of money and get us in trouble that we could stop, it's that. And so I just want us to reemphasize that point, and it's why I keep repeating it. If we're going to actually have relationship, which, you know, it's my obligation as your attorney when we sit in executive session to give you the true stuff on these cases against us, the good, the bad, the ugly. What is my estimation of our prospects for success? What is my estimation of where we can get knocked over the head? What great documentation we have that the other side doesn't know about that we're going to beat them over the head with when we get into court? I'm supposed to do that so that you can make decisions on these cases and give me authority, settle, don't settle, so on. But it really kills us if, when I've given you that evaluation, the attorney representing the person who's suing it knows about it the next day, or knows, oh, Siegel's got some documents that they don't know about. Well, now they know about it. So that's why I want to stress this confidentiality thing. And it goes with something that's called a fiduciary duty. And I've said this before. Fiduciary duty is the obligation that you have by virtue of a relationship in which you sit, an obligation to put someone's interests ahead of your own. You know, the classic example is you go out and you hire a real estate agent to sell your house. And the real estate agent sells your house, and it turns out he sold it to his second cousin, you know, who lives in Canarsie. And the second cousin got a good deal on your house, right? It's because that real estate agent has violated his fiduciary duty to you, which is to make sure you get the best price, not that his cousin gets the best price. An attorney, and sometimes, you know, attorneys will have issues of their own fees versus their clients' interests, or sometimes attorneys and clients get involved in business relationships. You know, the attorney has an obligation to put the client's interests above their own interests. As board members, you have an obligation. If there's any consideration at all between your own interest and Pacifica's interest, you put Pacifica's interest first. And if you feel that there's a conflict, that's when you recuse yourself. If you feel like you may hear something in an executive session that you just can't keep to yourself because you have such a need to go tell your friend, you should not be in that executive session. You should just step out and say, well, you know, I'm uncomfortable here because my uncle whatever is representing so-and-so who's suing Pacifica. And a conflict of interest and a fiduciary duty, it's not just financial. I mean, we talked about it financial. That's one. But if you're, again, as I said before, if you're a volunteer programmer and the decision is going to impact your show, it's a conflict of interest. If you have a political conflict of interest, if you have a personal conflict of interest, people just need to step back. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. We can open this up to questions and answers. I'll keep a stack. I have Margaret. Anyone else want to be on the stack? Nia? Anyone else? Oh, okay. All right, Margaret, go ahead.
Yes, Dan, I'm... Is the mic on?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm... No?
So.
I missed part of your presentation, Dan. I'm sorry for that, but I did hear the last part about confidentiality. This has been a problem and a discussion that we have had at KPFK. You, as legal counsel, had to actually come to a board meeting of KPFK and raise the issue of confidentiality there because clearly there were things happening an executive session at KPFK in relation to a lawsuit against the foundation that was then being somehow, and we don't know by whom or how it was done, but somehow that information was rather immediately getting back to, as you just said, to the lawyer representing the clients who are suing KPFK. Now, I'm not quite sure what to do, and in all due respect to all of us directors here at KPFK, because it is a concern. It is a concern that if executive session was being breached at the local station board level, where the PNB that holds the licensing for all of the stations and has fiduciary responsibility and therefore needs a level of information from legal counsel that we should have in order to make our decisions, what's going to happen if we don't have the confidence at this board that the information given to us in executive session will stay in executive session and not get into the hands of people who are suing us, who seem to be pretty well organized. LeVar used to talk about Pacifica National Bank, but people are now in touch with each other. They've formed a group, and they're communicating and exchanging strategies, et cetera. So I'm not quite sure what to propose. I don't know if to propose that all of us, including myself, who are directors from KPFK, recuse ourselves when the discussion comes up in relation to those lawsuits. I frankly don't know what to do. Insist that we all sign a confidentiality agreement, that there is some kind of penalty attached to it, and I don't know what that would be, removal from the board or missing some meetings. I'm not quite sure. I mean, it's up for the board to decide, but I really think that we are in a dilemma, and the dilemma is the information. We stand great risk of the information we receive in our executive sessions then being used as counsel has advised us against the board. And I really am open. It's a quandary. I don't know what to do. So I would really like to raise it as a question with the board, and people might have some suggestions of how to proceed it. It is deeply, deeply troubling, okay? And I think that will put our foundation at risk, and it has to be dealt with, and it has to be dealt with very, very seriously. And that is not to point the fingers at anybody on this board or anybody coming in at KPFK. I'm talking about KPFK now as a collective, and I'm including myself in that collective. So it's not to single out any particular party. Thank you.
Okay. Margaret, was that a question? I don't think
it is a question because I'm not quite sure what can we do to protect the Pacifica Foundation from these kinds of breaches of executive session.
Dan?
It's very serious. We've got two lawsuits now at KPFK, and confidentiality has been breached to the disadvantage of this foundation.
And it's a hard question, and I don't know the answer to the question. I mean, Margaret made a good point about reminding us that last year the board adopted a requirement of a confidentiality agreement that applies to this board, and I guess that's one thing the chair should do since this is a new board, is make sure that everyone signs the agreement. The agreement doesn't really create new rights or obligations. It's simply a way of giving everyone the opportunity to affirm their agreement and their knowledge of their obligations. If we find individuals, and we shouldn't be going on a, witch hunt or something like that, or making accusations if we don't have evidence. The idea, for example, that we would excuse everyone from KPFK from the meeting if we were discussing KPFK lawsuits. I mean, I could see on one hand the practical value of that, but on the other hand, I could see that it would also be very detrimental to the board, because I think it's a good thing if we're talking about something at KPFK that you not just hear from me, that you hear from people, you know, from the station who may have some information or knowledge either that I don't have or have a different point of view. I think that's, you know, that's appropriate. So I don't really know. I mean, I think it's largely a matter of, you know, self-policing in a sense. I mean, I can tell you I was in this big civil rights trial in Fresno a couple months ago. You all heard about it. But the judge was very tight and had a gag order, said we can't talk to the media. And I didn't agree. I didn't think it was right. And I did my best to figure out how to get information to the media, you know, either by using an intermediary or, you know, mail drops or whatever. So I know it can always be done. If someone has malice aforethought to harm the foundation by breaching its confidentiality, they're going to be able to do it. And perhaps even, you know, dirty up the trail a little bit to point suspicion at someone else, right? I mean, it can happen.
Okay.
But I think it's self-policing is really what it's about.
Okay. I have five people on the stack, and we have 20 minutes to go. So if we could keep it a little brief in case there are more people that want to speak, get inspired as we progress. Nia?
Okay. Dan, earlier you said that, and I quote, the CFO is responsible to the ED and to the board and to the ED to get the quote correct. Now, I know what responsible means. I don't want anybody to think that I don't know what it means. But in Pacifica's definition, what does responsible mean? Could you give me a clear example since I have to now read these evaluations, I mean, not the job descriptions, and then make an intelligent decision on this? I need to know, what is your definition of responsible, Pacifica's definition of responsible in terms of the CFO to the ED and the board?
Well, you know, I'm thinking of examples. Supposing, here's a real live thing, right? We're trying to increase our election coverage, all right? And Verna or Nathan or other people in our news department say, hey, I've got an idea for a show. You know, we're going to send a couple of people to Iowa. It's real life stuff, right? And it's going to cost $2,000. And those people report up through the ED. The ED says, hey, that's a great idea. Then the ED says to Lonnie, we need to find the money in the program budget to pay for this. It's Lonnie's job to try to find the money in the program budget to pay for it. Not to say, well, I think we should spend the money instead on a program, I don't know, about Cuba. And so I'm not going to approve the money for the election coverage because I have a different programmatic goal.
Thanks.
Okay. Mike?
Maybe Lonnie has more ideas.
Oh, Lonnie wants to weigh in? Yeah, go ahead.
Responsible, though, Dan, is not used in the bylaws. That word is not used. What I'm referring to is Article 5, Section E. And there is some ambiguity, but I don't think it's an ambiguity that can't be cleared up. Article 5, Section E of the bylaws, I'm reading from under E5, really makes it clear that the powers and functions of the board, and it basically says the board appoints, under our Section 5, appoints, supervises, and discharges the ED and the CFO. It doesn't say that it's shared for the ED. It's dual reporting, autonomously stated, and that's what I operate under. Now, in your example of the Ireland reporter, that seldom happens because it's either in the budget or it's not. And I religiously do not impose my own personal values on it. Now, if there's and that's been what no ED has said, that I impose that sort of, and I don't do it because I know my job. Now, where the language for the ED includes that broad language of financing and fundraising, that language is broad and vague, but these articles specify more what that language means. So the board in its wisdom did do overarching language, but it specified exceptions. And it said, yes, that kind of power exists for the ED, but when it comes to appointing and supervising, we, the board, reserve that for us. And that's really clear to me, and that's how I operate.
Well, you know, I agree, but let me just respond, because I think the appointing is clear. I think the supervising is shared. And where it says, for example, that this is Section 7B, the ED shall have general supervision, direction, and control of the business and officers of the foundation, and the primary responsibility for implementing the directives, decisions, and policies of the foundation and the board pertaining to administration, personnel, programming, financing, and public relations. So if the board says, you know, Mr. or Mrs. or Ms. Executive Director, we want you to ensure that over the next year there is a gala like the great one that just had at WPFW at each of the other stations. So then the ED might go to the CFO and say, well, the board has made a decision, and you and I need to work on this. And the CFO will say, sure. I mean, that's, you know, my point as practical matter is that it shouldn't be a problem. It's only a problem if people lack the confidence, openness, and honesty to deal with each other as human beings. I mean, I think that's where it comes about. But, you know, the rules require that both the CFO and the ED appoint respond to the board, but that overall, on a day-to-day basis, the ED is the responsible person. And it even says, you know, when you look at Section 9, CFO, it says the CFO shall do this and that, including shall render to the executive director and the board an account of all of his or her transactions as CFO and the financial condition of the foundation whenever requested. So the ED can say to the CFO, look, how much do we have in each of the bank accounts? What's the money look like? You know, we've been told to improve election programming or do a show on prison reform. Where can we find the money? And the CFO should help do that. And again, what I said earlier, I haven't seen a practical problem. I think there's only been a problem when certain people have made it a problem.
Yeah. Okay, Lonnie, you want to follow up?
Yeah, and I don't mean to be argumentative. I agree with you 100%. It hasn't really been a problem. That amazes me, because I spent the last 3 years finding $1 million a year in order to fund whatever the board wants to get done. I've taken that part of the job seriously. The only addition that I would add to it, on the ground, practically speaking, what the board in fact does is it says indeed to the executive director, we want to find $500,000 for X, Y, and Z. But it also says that motion will not be final until we have a fiscal impact statement and the CFO has identified that the funds are there and practical. So what it does is the dual process. It's part of every board motion. Remember, this board has passed that motion, that no motion should pass without a fiscal impact statement and identification of the funds. That is a policy of the board. So the board has solved the problem, I'm arguing, with its policy, the current policy statements that are in place.
And you know,
worse, by the way.
We want to say some of the best times I've had as interim ED in the last month or so have been working with Lonnie, going to the gala, which you'll hear more about tomorrow. The nice dinner we had last Friday night with this guy who was giving Pacifica $1 million and wants to help us raise a lot more. You know, and this is a lot of Lonnie's work.
Thank you. You know, Margaret, I'm going to have to stick with the stack for now because we only have about 11 minutes left, so I have Mike.
Dan, I wanted to return to the discussion.
Mike.
Okay, sorry, gang. I wanted to return to the discussion you were having with Margaret and ask a question about fiduciary duty and your response about self-policing, and wanted you to explore this under California law, because some of the examples I think you're citing are pretty egregious. when, if at all, under California law, when a board member, a national board member, breaches, or a local station board member, breaches fiduciary duty, which is breaching the high degree of loyalty and trust that they owe to the board, when does personal liability attach?
That's a good question, and maybe it's a good question, especially from the point of view of alerting anyone who may be inclined to do that. If someone's breach of fiduciary duty costs Pacifica money, that person could be sued by Pacifica for any losses that Pacifica incurs. And under California law, there are punitive damages as well as actual damages. In other words, if someone does something that causes us to have an out-of-pocket loss of $10,000, we sue that person. It could be a board member, could be me, you know. We can not only get to $10,000, we might get $100,000 in punitive damages on top of it. Now, and certainly, we didn't talk about this, but, you know, our bylaws, and again, you know, you can debate the wisdom of it, our bylaws make it very easy to expel someone. They make it very easy in the sense that as long as there's a certain level of due process, procedural due process is followed, substantively, it's very broad. You can expel someone because you think their conduct is contrary to the best interests of the foundation. That doesn't mean they have to have committed a crime or, you know, done anything specific. Honestly, I mean, if you think their conduct, they interrupt too much at board meetings, you could say their conduct is contrary to the best interests of the foundation. By a vote of 2/3, you kick them off the board or off the local station board. So we have at least those two remedies.
Okay. Effia.
Along that same line, in fact, I've been wondering why are we having this discussion with regard to fiduciary duty? How could it even be an issue at this point? Folks signed confidentiality agreements. If Pacifica, if the boards, whether it's the local board or the national board, doesn't take its own structure and process seriously enough to enforce it, then who is there? And that in and of itself is a breach of fiduciary responsibility and leaves all of us open since everybody's so afraid of lawsuits, to being sued for the failure to misfeasance and malfeasance in office. With regard to, I'm thinking about the instance recently, I guess it was Hewlett-Packard, where they had some similar kind of thing that was going on, and I know, you know, we in our touchy-feely leftist progressive modes don't like to think about ourselves in court, but that's exactly what we're talking about. And so investigation, you want to call a witch hunt, investigation is appropriate, and when it's determined that someone has in fact violated their confidentiality agreement, that someone has violated the interest of the corporation, then they are subject to the same penalties that any and everybody else is subject to, including being sued and held liable for the damage that is done to the corporation. So if we don't want to do it for the for our personal, because we don't want to think ill of each other, we have to do it as in the interest of the corporation, the organization that we have stood up and stepped up and said that we are going to protect and promote. Failure to do that on collectively leaves us all individually liable.
Okay. Was you wanted to pose a question or that was a comment? Effia? Okay. Well, I have two more on the stack and just a few minutes, and we can wrap this up and go to lunch. I have Evelyn and Lisa, so Evelyn.
You can let me go. I don't need to repeat anything anybody else has said.
Okay, Lisa.
I'm just going to be brief, and this has come up before, but I think one of the issues is, I mean, we have Robert's rules and we have the bylaws, and they're, you know, rather cumbersome, but I think we need to have processes more defined in terms of for directors, not just directors, but board members, especially pertaining to the board, because I believe personnel might have something like this that I don't think that the board has. And I think those things are really important, that we have something defined, really defined and structured, that here are your responsibilities as a board, that goes beyond Robert's rules and the bylaws, because there are many areas that they do not address. For example, just very simple areas about reporting. Like, there might be sometimes, as a board member, you might hear something or somebody might say something that's of concern to you. Well, how would you go about handling that? How would you go about presenting that to the, you know, to the organization, or how would you go about questioning something? If there was something that you really did disagree with, well, there should be a way that you could kind of formalize it, putting in writing, say, you know, the board did da-da-da-da-da, I object. And I think that without that, I think that's one of the ways. It probably won't absolutely make 100% guarantee that there will not be lapses in confidentiality, but I think it gives more structure to work with, and that's one of the issues, and you know, we'll be getting it into a little bit more tomorrow during some of the reporting, that I think becomes a problem, that there's just not enough structure, especially pertaining to board members and what our responsibilities are and how we should proceed accordingly with things. So I think we need to really take that more seriously and look into developing something like that, and I'm not volunteering to do that.
You know, if I could just comment briefly. See, I think you're completely right, Lisa, completely. And that's why, you know, and I know this is one of Sarv's issues, to do a code of conduct, you know. And then when a committee starts working on it, people should brainstorm about what the issues are. Because, you know, some of it may also, you know, it's not going to call you an MF in public, but it's also things like what you're talking about, how we deal with those issues. And I think what you said is also responsive to... I hope I've said it. Afia? Is that how I say your name? Afia's point. You know, I think sometimes people have felt almost like they had an obligation to break the rules because they felt that, you know, they heard something that someone else needed to hear. In fact, there was a situation about a year and a half ago where someone wrote and says, you know, I think it's a matter of principle for me to put out this information that they had obtained in confidence. And I'm sure they did, but it wasn't, you know, consistent with our obligations.
But that's
okay,
I'm
going
to... I'm sorry, even beyond a code of conduct, maybe like a manual or something, you know, just, I just think...
Okay, I'm going to call on Bob, and then Evelyn is back on the stack. Go ahead, Bob.
I just want to follow up on one aspect of what Lisa raised, which is a situation that's become all too common on the WBAI local station board, which is board members will be told something by somebody, staff member, a listener, whatever, that is an allegation of wrongdoing on the part of a staff member. And rather than go through any kind of channels within the structure, reporting it to management, asking for them to look into it, see if there's any credence to the allegations, they'll come to a board meeting or they'll come to a public email list and say, you know, I have good information that equipment's been stolen. I have good information that, you know, bills have been paid inappropriately, et cetera, et cetera. And this becomes a repetitive pattern that makes it more and more difficult to then go and have the station staff appeal to the listeners every few months to give money if there are board members alleging that money is being misspent and all sorts of other misconduct is occurring. So I'm wondering, Dan, if you could just give us some broad guidelines, and I agree with Lisa, I think we should develop a protocol that about how a board member should deal with information or allegations about possible misconduct by the staff before just going public with it.
Well, you know, first of all, your point is a good one, and we know that that's occurred, particularly with respect to the program director at WBAI, who has been unmercifully slandered on public websites and so on with allegations of misconduct which have not been proven. You know, our staff has a right to confidentiality with respect to personnel matters, and I'm not a 50-state expert in this area of law, but in California, people do get sued fairly regularly for exposing personnel information about employees that is private, whether it has to do with alleged misconduct or medical issues or so on. And, you know, it's another punitive damages situation. So I think it should be clear that that's, you know, it's not only bad manners, but it's improper. It really jeopardizes people's rights and reputations. in a forum where they can't respond except to write the email. No, I didn't rob that bank, you know. Thirdly, it exposes people, exposes us to liability.
Okay, we have 1 minute to go. I'd like to call on Evelyn and Yosh and then have Dan respond, if that'd be all right.
Sure. Okay. I'm going to be very brief. One of the things that we constantly talk about is code of conduct, which we have sent to governance, and it has yet to come out of there. And we do this on a regular basis. We know what it is we need to do. We have things in place that are already in place that we just don't follow procedure. And what I would like to see this year is that for some of the things that we have sent to governance to come out of governance so that this body can deal with it, and that we stop directing things to governance because we know that it will be delayed when it gets there, because we haven't seen anything come out of there in the time that I've been on the PNB. And I would really hope that this body will insist that especially the code of conduct be dealt with and come out so that we can approve it and get on with the business of the foundation, because that is a very critical piece of what we're trying to address. Because we have no substance to be able to deal with those issues without the code of conduct coming out so that we can be held accountable.
Okay.
Point of information, Margaret?
Yeah, what's your point?
The point of information is that this PNB indeed passed a motion that included language and a code of conduct, and a timeline was put on it to be reported back to this board.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going to call on Yosh and Grace, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, I think at least some of this discussion points up to the need for Pacifica to have a strong human relations director, and that director be available to all five signal areas.
Okay, Grace.
Several things. First, these are serious allegations of breach of confidentiality. The accusation should be stated specifically in executive session, because as far as I'm concerned, right now they're simply accusations until proven to be true. The next thing is, I am the convener of the Code of Conduct Working Group of the Governance Committee. We met together many times. However, in the last 3 or 4 months at least, I have sent out at least 8 or 9 emails to the working group and have had little or no response, and therefore we have not met. And even worse than that is the fact that the governance committee has not reached quorum more than once or twice in the last 7 or 8 months. So this is something of a lack of participation by the PNB and by other members of these committees, and has really stopped the work on a committee level of this body.
Dan, do you have any final comment before we go to lunch?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have 1 hour for lunch, so we'll be back here at 2 p.m. And we'll be in executive session at 2 p.m. Where is lunch? Is it in there? We have 3 more minutes?
10
more minutes. Okay. Why don't we have some listener comments? Executive session is scheduled to run from 2 till 5:30. Are there any listeners who would like to speak, address the board? We'll give you 90 seconds each.
Point of order.
Yeah, okay. Bob.
At all past meetings I've been to, it's been 2 minutes per week.
2 minutes?
Yeah.
So 2 minutes for public comment. Fine. Can somebody maybe bring that microphone over? Yeah, is there some way that... Can we move the microphone? Yeah, great. Thanks, Mike. Oh, it's a short cord.
Oh, you'll hear me. You'll hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, my name is Linda Slices, and I'm a staff person at WBAI, and I am also a plaintiff on the lawsuit that Dan Siegel spoke about today. And I watched all of you vote, and you all voted based on what he said, and there's verifiable proof that he lied on three items. And I think that if your interim executive director is lying to you, not only is he risking his own license as a lawyer, but he's also giving you false information to vote on. Secondly, I think that for the three candidates, the three delegates who have seated here to vote that they should remain on this board, that they cast a self-interest vote and you allowed it, is appalling.
Thank you.
I think that my experience with WBAI has taught me a great deal, overwhelming amount. And today, I learned even more, because I could not believe that Mr. Siegel actually said that there was a self-interest motive on the part of the plaintiffs in this lawsuit, that we only wanted our people, whoever that is, to vote. It's absolutely a lie, a bizarre way to think that I would spend my money, time, and energy. And second of all, that he said that the judge would sanction the continuation of these three delegates who do nothing but benefit from the extension of the lawsuit, because the way you have it situated, they will be sitting here, they could be here another 10 years if they could drag out the lawsuit according to what you have voted on. And I really strongly recommend that you readdress this issue of their right to sit here today, because this is such a travesty of justice. And furthermore...
Okay. That's time.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I'd just like to state that, in my view, public comment is a free speech time, and that members of the public are free to come at us with anything they want. But I do really urge members of this community to learn to respect each other and to address issues and not personalities. I think that's what really
that
one of the
not
biggest.
A personality, that is an issue. If he committed a lie, he is representing all of you. It's not his personality. I don't have the biggest idea what his personality is like.
Okay.
Another issue.
Okay, thank you. All right, you, sir.
Hi, my name is Mitchell Cohen, and I'm on the LSV at WBAI, and I also am a plaintiff in the lawsuit that we had talked about. I was very interested in the discussion of confidentiality here, because we focused a lot, and rightly so, on the need to suppress information from getting out into the public if it was done in executive session and so forth, and to figure out what sanctions to take on people who might violate that. But the other half of that has to do with public right to know other types of information, public right to know when a staff member assaults physically or punches a listener delegate, they have a right to, or a listener member, they have a right to put that out there and say, this is what happened to me. Are you saying that, no, that shouldn't put it out there, but they should just go immediately to the police and take it through the courts and the police system? Is that what you want to turn this Pacifica into? No, we let people decide how to handle that among our own communities and not have to always go or be recommended to go. I'm surprised that Mr. Siegel, the recommendation would come that this be handled through the system in some way. The implications of what you were saying. Said not to put it out there to public on listservs and so forth. The other part I wanted to, I totally agree with what Linda's assessment was, that there are extreme misrepresentations, I won't use the word lie because people don't like that word, even though they were lies, that Mr. Siegel made. This I passed around the petition, the plaintiffs in the case, what our view was on what happened yesterday, and the actual statement of the injunction. And I would like you to read that. This preliminary injunction sought by the plaintiffs is granted, contrary to what Mr. Siegel said.
Okay, that's time, Mitchell.
If I could just read that one sentence.
One sentence. Okay, complete your sentence.
The defendants shall not count the ballots of the WBAI delegate election until all qualified voters who have not received ballots are given ballots and are provided with a reasonable opportunity to cast them.
That was our, the plaintiff's position.
Thank you.
And that's what the judge's order says,
contrary to
what Mr. Siegel said.
Thank you. Okay, now we're going to hear from everyone that's in line currently. It looks like there's four of you. Is that correct? Or three? And then we will go to lunch. But thank you very much. Okay, Michael.
I'm Michael Woods from KPFT. I served last year as a director, and I want to thank you all for your respect of me in hearing that coin flip issue. And I want to congratulate everyone here for the honor that they have in serving Pacifica. I wanted to address the technology committee issue. I was chair of the technology committee, and I'm proud to say that we made a quorum, I believe, in every phone call and or every meeting that we had. And I would urge, in a central criticism that I had of last year's board, is that you do not structure yourself, and I think you should be really advised that the board basically, I think, comes at its meetings piecemeal. I like Dan's efforts to focus it better, and I think it's incumbent, I think it's a shame, and the members should know that we really don't organize by committees, and the committees aren't functioning. And if you could put your efforts towards somehow fixing it so that the committees meet by phone, which is an onerous task for everybody, because people have lives in their own work, and then get those committees respected so that when they report here, the board takes up their work, respects that work, and get down the road, then maybe we could actually try this experiment in democracy, which is trying to empower the people in the People's Radio. So that's all I'll have to say about the committee structure. And please, no disrespect to Dave, but I think that was a central failing last year. And as Dan knows and Dave, no good deed goes unpunished around Pacifica. So I hope that everybody respects their good work. It's selfless work they do. And Dave is a visionary. Please support him with regards to his proposed changes, because we must have the infrastructure to do that on the technology committee. And if we don't put the infrastructure in, then we're irrelevant, and we can't put an infrastructure in because we're at loggerheads right now on technology, because we don't have an ED or an IED who can make those kinds of decisions.
Thank you. That's time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Michael. Is that Jamie?
Yes. Hi. My name is Jamie Ross. I'm a WBAI listener member, and I've served on the LSB. First, I'd like to welcome you all here, and I'd like to make a few brief points about finances. My main point is I'd like to urge you as a board to take very seriously your responsibilities of financial oversight with regard to WBAI. It seems that it's publicly known now that finances, that BAI is in bad financial shape. And it also seems to be publicly known at this point that the rest of the network, to some degree, helps pay for WBAI's expenses. One thing I'd like to draw your attention to is at your last PNB meeting on September 30, 2007, The PNB passed a motion, which I thought was a good motion regarding oversight of WBAI's finances, where you asked for reports of financial information to be sent weekly from BAI management to the board. And as far as I know, I don't believe that's been followed up on. So I would urge you to please make sure that is followed up on. One particular kind of report that I hope you do get is something that's called the MEMSIS report. This is something that's developed for every fund drive, and it shows the actual amount that was pledged. Why this is important to you to understand BAI's finances and to see that we're meeting budget is the thing that happens at BAI. Oh, by the way, I should say that I've served on BAI's local finance committee for several years now. The thing that happens at BAI with regard to fund drives is at the end of the drive, they announce a pledge total. And I think for the fall drive that just happened, it was announced at $817,000. And then usually what's happened in the past is 2 weeks later,
that's time.
Okay, can I finish my thought? What happens 2 weeks later is we get a MEMSIS report, which is the official report of the drive, And that shows that the pledge total is substantially less than what was initially announced. So my point is, you guys cannot track whether BAI is meeting its goals or how far, by how far it's missing its goals, unless you get these reports. So okay, just to end my statement, I really urge you to do your financial oversight, and thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon and welcome to the WBI area. My name is Marcus Osson. I'm a shop steward from WBI's unpaid staff organizing committee. I'm one of the persons accused by way of innuendo in the lawsuit against Pacifica of tampering with the zip codes of the members. I must assure you that we have done no such thing. And all we have done is provided addresses, including zip code of our members, as they have reported it to us, following the directives of the election supervisors. Also at the unpaid staff, we have supported the staff in general. We have raised our voice against layoffs and have provided some concrete proposal to management to avoid layoffs so that the staff that is already at a skeletal level does not get pared down more. Also, on a personal level, I would like to say that the people that are suing Pacifica are against, they have raised their voice against Pacifica providing membership to those that cannot afford it by way of waivers. And I say that's totally un-Pacifican. And those of our listeners who need waivers should be afforded them in a way that respect their dignity and humanity. And thank you very much for listening to me.
Thank you.
Jack, excuse me, can I have a very brief point of personal privilege?
Okay.
Thank you. So I want to say I appreciate Mitch and Linda's statements, but maybe they were tired last night when they prepared this flyer. And I hope everybody takes a look at it. It says what happened in court yesterday. And yeah, hang on, Mitch.
Yeah.
May I finish my point?
Dan, just finish your point. I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it is time for public comment.
No,
and typically we don't respond. You know.
I know, but I've been accused of lying.
Dan, I really ask you to. I mean, I don't know what the policy is on the PNB, but generally we don't respond. I mean, they can come at us, and we sort of have to take it. I'm sorry, Serene.
Hi. Hey, how do you know my name? Hi, and welcome to everyone. Welcome to New York. I don't know if anyone's bothered to say that. Welcome to the extension of New York, which is to say New Jersey. I see some of you have not had the good sense to stay away. You've come back for more. And I thank many of you for doing that. There's a lot of work to be done, and experience helps. Truth helps, too, but I've found that that's not in high value in some circles at Pacifica. With regard to the lawsuit, I was in court on November 29th, and the attorney for the plaintiffs stated, and I quote, "We do not wish to, quote, allow people not before the court to obtain relief they have not sought." So this mythology that they want everyone who's eligible to vote to be able to vote, they don't say that in their papers. They don't say that in their lawsuit. They don't say that on their posts all over the place, and their attorney doesn't say that before the judge. Further, yesterday, I heard their attorney, who may have been confused, and perhaps the persons who informed him were also confused, claim that the reason we have staggered terms is so that the board can function with 12 people when it has to. I thought we had staggered terms because, and we had this whole two-year bylaw process, where we agreed we didn't want a complete board overturn because there was some fear of being taken over again. And that's why the terms were staggered. So I don't know which confused member shared that with their attorney. I'm not saying he's confused. I'm just saying he's incorrect. What happened yesterday is that, was that yesterday? God, time warp. What happened yesterday is that the attorney says the temporary restraining order that prevents the election from moving forward is lifted, and their attempts to block directors from being seated was denied. Now, I'm not an attorney. I don't play one on TV. But I know that when he spoke from the bench, there was utter confusion on the face of virtually everyone in that courtroom except for the attorneys. So perhaps they should have gotten some help in drafting their flyer.
Okay,
I understood.
That's time.
That can't be time, really?
Yeah, it is.
Okay,
sorry.
More to come. Thanks.
I'll hear from you later. Okay, thank you very much, members of the public. It is, lunch is served, so we'll be back in 1 hour, which will be 2:20 p.m.
Point of information, she meant welcome to New Jersey.
Correct. Thank you.
Just had to rectify that. The same place for breakfast.